Gene therapy, a double-edged modality with few propitious targets against cardiovascular disorders like heart failure, hypertension, and infarction. Introduction. Gene therapy is a therapeutic modality which involves replacement of altered or non-functional gene with a healthy one. We Indians are said to have a genetic disadvantage when it comes to being affected by coronary disorders because we as an ethnic race tend to have a high lipoprotein content compared to other races in the Asian region like that of China. At present, the situation can be compared as a coronary epidemic and the fact that in the past 30 years, the average age of first heart attack in India decreased by 20 years, out of which men dominated the figures with over 50% of them being below 55 years and 25% being below 40 years. This supports the statement. Heart, being a localized organ, makes it a potential target for surgical local in vivo gene delivery. The cardiomyocytes, being post-mitotic cells, require a prolonged and efficient gene expression, which is mainly met by vectors like adenoviruses, adeno-associated viruses, and lentiviruses. The molecular pathways are again essential to identify the targets for the gene therapy for heart failure and also from the backbone for planning or bringing gene therapy into clinical practice. Targets for gene therapy for heart failure. Target 1, calcium channel, levels of calcium in the body. Normally, when an excitation impulse reaches the sacroplasmic reticulum, that is SR, through the transverse, that is T-tubule, the voltage-gated calcium channels, longitudinal, that is L-type, open and allow small amount of calcium influx, which contributes to the calcium released by the SR through the ryanodine receptors, which activates the myofilaments, causing contraction of the myocardial muscle. During relaxation, the SR reaccumulates the calcium back through the sacroendoplasmic reticulum calcium ATPase pump, that is SERCA2A, and then this calcium is pumped out extracellularly by the sacrolemmal, that is Na-CA exchanger. In humans, 75% of the calcium is removed by SERCA2A, while the remaining is removed by the Na-CA exchanger. This action of SERCA2A is inhibited by phospholamban protein, that is unphosphorylated state, while the phosphorylated state, that is CAMP and CA calmodium dependent protein kinase, reverse this inhibition. The architecture of a functional sacroendoplasmic reticulum with the location of the key player is shown in table oblique figure 1. Target 2, apoptosis. In table oblique figure 3, various signaling cascades are shown which contribute to the mechanism of apoptosis, that is programmed cell death of the cardiac myocytes, which in turn cause heart failure. These cascades include mitogen or stress-activated phosphokinase, that is SAPK, like P38, the P53 gene and certain growth factors like insulin growth factor, that is IGF-1, which inhibits other contributors like ischemia and hypoxia. Target 3, beta-2 adrenergic receptors. There's quite a difference in the consequences of beta-2 adrenergic receptor AR stimulation and beta-1 AR formats, the basis of it being used as a target against heart failure. Stimulation of beta-1 AR has an apoptotic arrhythmogenic potential, whereas the beta-2 AR signaling pathway is devoid of these negative effects. Therefore, using gene transfer for beta 2AR and beta ARK inhibitor will restore the CAMP levels, resulting in increased functionality of the cardiomyocytes. Delivery of gene therapy for heart failure. The vector of choice for this purpose is none other than the recombinant adenovirus, including the helper dependent, which has a range of carrying capacity and is capable of transducing the non-dividing cells as well. But the immune response, which it is capable of provoking, is the main reason for the search for better vector. Since heart is a localized organ, various mechanical methods have been tried to deliver the virus locally into the heart muscle or myocardium. Using the epicardial approach, recombinant adenoviruses were injected into the ventricular wall, though the results showed high gene expression, but this effect was localized to the injected area, some of the area around the point of injection. Also, there was even damage caused to the myocardial fibers by the needle. Then, intracoronary catheterization was tried, which resulted in expression in areas supplied by the coronaries. Intramyocardial delivery using the intraventricular approach with retroperfusion of the coronary veins also resulted in localized gene expression. In Rodents, the pericardial approach was tried, which again showed the expression only in the pericardial layers, but the effect was much better with the addition of collagenase and hyaluronidase. All the above-mentioned methods were not useful as effective gene therapies for heart failure, as gene expression throughout the whole heart, that is, myocardium, is required. Donahue et al. Identified few conditions that increase the efficiency of gene transfer and expression in explanted hearts using intracoronary perfusion. Conditions included use of crystalloid solution instead of whole blood, temperature and high coronary perfusion, viral concentration and exposure time. To achieve this gene transfer in vivo, a catheter was introduced through the apex of the rodent's heart and pushed beyond the aortic wall, then a high concentration of recombinant adenovirus was injected through the catheter, with the clamping of the aorta and the pulmonary artery for 10 to 40 seconds distally to the catheter. This resulted in homogeneous gene expression in both the ventricles. Morris et al. Used the same technique for expression of beta adrenergic receptors, but they instead clamped only the aorta as shown in table oblique figure 5. And moreover, their results basically showed mainly epicardial gene expression, thus highlighting the importance of clamping of both the vessels, which restrict the increase in left ventricular end diastolic pressure, resulting in more efficient transfection of the endocardium by the adenovirus. Thus, it is now known that optimization of conditions not only is important in ex vivo gene delivery, but also plays equally important role in vivo gene delivery, especially local in vivo gene delivery. Hypertension. Background. Hypertension is one of the most common cardiovascular disorders that result in death in the developed nations. It causes complications like stroke, myocardial infarction, atherosclerosis and end-stage renal failure, which in turn contribute to the mortality rate due to it. Systemic hypertension is a multifactorial disorder, and its polygenic base has resulted in doubts of the gene therapy for it being successful at all or not. Primary pulmonary hypertension is a progressive disorder due to intimal hyperplasia and in situ thrombosis resulting in increased pulmonary circulation resistance and which in turn results in right side heart failure. The biggest advantage and the need for gene therapy for hypertension are because of the fact that the present day drug therapy only suppresses the disorder and its effects, and that also only if there is a patient compliance. That's the patient takes these drugs regularly as prescribed. And since it is a long-term therapy, there are chances of drug resistance and adverse effects of the drugs, as they are non-specific. Targets for gene therapy for hypertension. Target 1, renin-angiotensin system, that is RAS. The RAS is the central regulator of both the cardiovascular and the renal homeostasis. That is, its components are the key controllers for the regulation of blood pressure and fluid levels in the body. It is basically an endocrine system in which the key product, angiotensin II, regulates the major actions. Please refer to table oblique figure 6. Recently, the discovery of human analog of angiotensin-converting enzyme, that is ACE, known as ACE2, has given us one more very potential target for gene therapy against hypertension. This ACE2 is a central regulator of both the cardiovascular and the renal homeostasis and acts through various pathways for regulating the blood pressure in our bodies. Table oblique figure 7 explains this. Target 2. Genes for vasoactive peptides. There are many vasoactive peptides that have been studied as potential targets for the gene therapy against hypertension. Human kallikrein, HK, is one of them. It cleaves kininogen to produce kinin, which is a potent vasoactive peptide that regulates both cardiovascular and renal functions. Other vasodilatory genes are that of HL, natriuretic peptide, that is ANP, adenomedulin, and endothelial nitric oxide synthase, that is ENOs. These are useful for both systemic and pulmonary hypertension. Other vasodilator genes that are useful for pulmonary hypertension are calcitonin gene-related peptide, that is CGRP, and prostaglandin 1 synthase, that is PG1. Delivery of gene therapy for hypertension. One of the most recent and effective targets has been ACE2, for the effective delivery of which two factors have played an important role. Firstly, the engineered ACE2, that is the secretory human ACE2, rather than the plasma membrane-bound ACE2, and secondly, the development of an efficient vector for intramuscular gene delivery like that of lentiviruses. Also, the use of cell-penetrating peptides at CPP, which are at present being studied as potential vectors for gene therapy, may in future also make local and sustained gene expression of the target genes possible. Studies on ACE and AT1R using the down-regulation antisense approach of these genes on animal models have shown very positive results and is one of the most widely used approaches against hypertension. It is very important to know that down-regulation of genes is not as sensitive as their overexpression. Another important limitation to the antisense approach is the body's compensatory mechanism, which will affect the efficiency of this approach on a long-term basis. Overexpression of vasoactive peptide genes like ANP, kallikrein and ENOs, when they were transferred via naked DNA or viral vectors in a spontaneously hypertensive rat, showed a drop of 20 to 30 mg mercury over a period of 6 to 12 weeks, whereas intercardiac injections of viral particles containing antisense ODN of 81R or angiotensinogen resulted in a drop of 30 to 60 mg mercury for a period of 36 days, while the retroviral ACE antisense delivery resulted in a drop for 100 days. Therapeutic angiogenesis, the background. Today at present, most of the ongoing human clinical trials on gene therapy, that is about 90%, are based on gene therapy against therapeutic angiogenesis. For an effective gene therapy, all that is required is a transient gene expression of the therapeutic gene to alter the physiological response as a result of the disorder. In this case, it is a formation of new blood vessels, that is angiogenesis, in the infarcted tissue. Not only the requirement of a transient gene expression of the therapeutic gene is sufficient to bring about the desired change, but it also keeps the safety issues in mind, that is, prolonged gene expression of these therapeutic genes will not only alter the disease, but with it, it gives us the risk of having newer problems. The first clinical trial on cardiovascular disease began in 1994 and it involved intramuscular injection of plasmids carrying the FGF for angiogenesis against the peripheral arterial occlusion. There are 22 structural homologs of this protein which bind to the FGF receptors, and talking of receptors, there are four types of them having extracellular immunoglobulin-like domain having cytoplasmic tyrosine kinase activity. Out of these 22 types, FGF1 and FGF2 are the ones that lack these signaling peptides that the others possess, which directs them out to extracellular matrix. It's because of this that these two have the maximum angiogenic potential and are mostly used. It is because of this diversity in the receptors and structure of the FGF that at times the desired effect is not reached, as they are more prone to antagonized, known as knockout transgenes, thus producing a milder effect or no effect at all. The main mechanism by which FGF2, best studied, acts by stimulating the proliferation and migration of endothelial stage. They also act as mitogens for vascular smooth muscle cells and macrophages. Both these actions are synergistic and result in massive new blood vessel formation compared to one that only stimulates the endothelial cells. Target 2, vascular endothelial growth factor. Out of the various isoforms generated as a result of alternating splicing of the peptide, only VEGF-121 and VEGF-165 are the ones that are used the most for angiogenic purposes, simply because of their diffusing properties. VEGF as a secreted diffusible protein has various actions, and the major one being stimulation of proliferation of endothelial cells. Therefore, it is one of the candidate genes for gene therapy for angiogenesis. There are two receptors that have been identified for angiogenesis, and they are VEGFR1 and VEGFR2. Both these receptors are found in the endothelial cells and Macrophages and account for the specificity of the VEGF. These receptors have accessory isoform receptors like neuropilin 1, that is NPL1, and the integrins that facilitate their action. Please refer to table / figure 7. Target 3. Second generation angiogenic peptides, that is hypoxia induced factor HIF 1 alpha, angioproteins 1 and 2. HIF 1 alpha protein is a second generation angiogenic peptide and basically used in arteriogenesis, which, unlike the simple angiogenesis, involves a coordinated action of multiple factors in the formation of a new vessel. Its action is basically of regulatory gene. It is a rapidly degraded transcription factor that, in presence of hypoxia, stabilizes and causes expression of the angiogenic genes, that is mainly the first generation ones, and also genes involved with the glycolysis pathway. Risk associated with cardiovascular gene therapy. Background. For cardiovascular gene therapy, clinical trials, whether using viral or non-viral vectors, so far no evidence of complication as a result to the vector being used has been produced. The fact that there has been increase in clinical trials for cardiovascular disorders, especially with ones using non-viral vectors, is an indication in itself that the risks associated with it are very less compared to other gene therapy trials. Also, the increasing use of naked DNA for cardiovascular gene therapy reflects on the safety issues involving viral vectors without compromising on the efficiency of gene transfer, as it can be optimized to be as efficient as the adenovirus by modifications to the backbone of the vector and or with changes in the mode of physical delivery, for example, ultrasound exposure. Inflammation is another complication reported after certain preclinical trials, but this does not result in any disease as such. Fever and abnormal liver function tests, that is LFT, have been reported with adenoviral gene transfer of VEGF and VFGF genes. Mortality. As stated earlier, the clinical trials for cardiovascular gene therapy had been carried out on a set of people who are so severely ill that even if the therapy fails, they have very little to lose. Patients of limb ischemia and end-stage coronary artery disease, that is CAD, were chosen for the purpose. After this selection of people, the main question was to differentiate the cause of death, if occurred in them, whether the death was due to the gene transfer or due to the underlying disease. It was shown that none of the deaths were due to the gene transfer. Morbidity. Like most of the interventional modalities, gene therapy also has many morbidity problems. The most common morbidity problem reported in relation to cardiovascular gene therapy is lower extremity edema, but there has been no report as yet on it being lethal. There are few others that are discussed below. Neoplasms. The main reason for neoplasm to be postulated as a risk factor was simply because of the therapeutic angiogenesis gene, which was seen to increase the blood supply not only in the targeted tissue but also in dormant neoplasms in the body, which as a result would become active. However, there is very little chance of this happening, as firstly, it is seen that the gene transfer is localized to the target tissue, and secondly, even if the viral particles do enter the systemic circulation, there are in so low amounts, that is pictogram per millimeter range, that they cannot contribute towards activation or formation of a neoplasm. Moreover, these particles can stay in circulation for about less than 4 weeks, so with so less amount and that too for such a less period of time, it's very unlikely to contribute towards a neoplasm. But it remains a potential risk for it when it comes to gene therapy involving endothelial cell mitogen. However, two new neoplasms were found in patients who had undergone VEGF gene transfer through plasmid liposomes, that is VEGF-P/L, and they were a malignant glioma and hypernephroma. There was also a case of hypernephroma reported in a patient with VEGF transfer. This tumor was resected and patient remains alive without recurrence 3 years after the procedure. In the VIVA and the TRAFFIC trials, neoplasm found in patients was either from controlled or from placebo group. However, we must not forget that patients, that is elderly group, have a certain prior risk for cancer and longer follow-up to increase the understanding of the relationship between cardiovascular gene therapy and neoplasms is essential. Retinopathy. Although VEGF and FGF have been implicated in the proliferative retinopathies, there is no evidence as such that gene transfer of these genes causes it. Again, in the VIVA and the TRAFFIC trials, there were 3 cases reported in total, all of which were either from the control or from the placebo group. Moreover, diabetes is very commonly seen in patients enrolling for angiogenic gene trials, but even in this high-risk group and in patients who had retinopathy before, there's no evidence of any contribution as such, even on long-duration follow-up. Edema. VEGF is seen as a potent factor that increases the vascular permeability, thus resulting in complications like that of ascites, that is abdominal filling with fluid, in malignancies. Edema in the lower extremities has been documented in patients who have undergone VEGF transfer for peripheral vascular diseases. But this edema responded well to diuretics and was resolved within weeks. But this complication is one of the limitations of the VEGF gene therapy. Hypotension. Gene therapies involving the VEGF and FGF transfers cause increased production in nitric oxide, which is a potential dilator, thus causing the risk of hypotension. But this complication is so far not documented both from animal and for human trials because of low circulating levels of the gene product versus the high circulating levels of the recombinant protein. Arrhythmias. Gene therapy involving gene transfer for heart failure like that of beta-1 receptor and that for calcium channels may be potential risk for the development of arrhythmias in patients along with patients in whom myocardial gene transfer of angiogenic growth factor is done. Accelerated atherosclerosis. There are sufficient data from animal models that delivery of angiogenic cytokines like that of recombinant human RHVEGF causes accelerated atherosclerosis, although data from such clinical trials till date do not give any such relationship between the two. Vascular malformations. Various vascular malformations have been reported with the injection of high dosage of VEGF like hemangiomas and telangiectasia. The discussion. Experimental data and the information received from various ongoing clinical trials on gene therapy for cardiovascular disorders have been very encouraging, but again the searches for an ideal vector system and even for the right gene are still few of the major obstacles in our quest for a safe and efficient therapeutic modality against these disorders. For complex disorders like that of hypertension, more than one gene needs to be targeted, and so what we can call a therapeutic gene cocktail should serve the purpose. The clinical trials for vascular gene transfer have not only shown it to be safe but also with a lot of therapeutic potential when delivered intravascularly. But for further clinical trials, we must first test and find an efficient vector and study model, keeping in mind the good manufacturing practices. Then after the protocol approved and toxicological testing, we should bring it in for clinical trials and try in patients and human tissue. From 1989, the first gene transfer, to present day, the technology has seen rapid progress in terms of yielding novel vectors and also the progress in clinical trials. Up to 2004, there have been 76 clinical trials for cardiovascular gene therapy, out of which 64 were for therapeutic angiogenesis, mainly involving FGF and VEGF genes. At present, the majority of the new trials in this field are in phase 1 still, but with the development of specialized gene therapy units like that of University of Pittsburgh, USA, and the A1, Vitanen Institute of Molecular Studies, FIND in Europe, to name a few, trials have entered phase 2 and some even phase 3 stages. The rationale at present against gene therapy as a therapeutic modality, especially after a few setbacks like the famous Jesse Gelsinger death, which was attributed to the overdose of the drug, can be summarized by the joint statement issued by the American and European Gene Therapy Societies in response to an article in Nature. The field of gene therapy is working to develop new and better methods to treat a variety of severe disorders, including genetic diseases such as hemophilia and SCID, and also cancer and AIDS. The clear-cut therapeutic benefits seen in recent clinical trials of gene therapy for XSCID and ADA-deficient SCID warrant judicious consideration of the benefits and risk of this approach compared to imperfect alternatives such as haploidentical hematopoietic stem cell transplantation.